All right, let's go back to the phones. Back to the phone. We'll say hi. You're on with the Motor Mouths.
Ray, Tom Carter.
Tom, how are you? You're on.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom.
You're on with Ray and Chris and with our good buddy Paul in the studio with us today.
Hey, guys.
Pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm doing fine. So if I put this on speakerphone, would that look, can you tell me how that sounds?
Sure. Yeah, we'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
You never know what kind of audio maladies. We get plagued by everything on this show, so what's one more of them, right?
Oh, I understand, yeah. So, and what do you have, like 9 people listening to you right now?
Yeah, maybe 9, maybe 10. Yeah, I don't know, something like that.
You make 10, Tom.
Millions of listeners, millions.
Yeah. I'm not listening. So, does this sound okay?
Yes, that's fine. You're good. You're good.
Cool.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Millions of listeners, 9 paying attention.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on. Popular radio shows about cars are so overrated. I mean, come on.
This is quality programming. That's why you need to donate. Don't forget.
That's right.
That's exactly it. Tom, are you writing stuff? Are you still traipsing through barns?
Yeah, you know.
Last time I saw you, you were standing next to a Cobra. There was a Ferrari. You had a bevy of Superbirds in the back of some place in North Carolina.
Right.
And I was like, I was drooling. That was the last thing I saw of you. And I'm like, he is the luckiest man on the face of the earth right now.
On the video, the video channel, yeah. But the thing that got us to you now, Tom, is your new book. Well, actually, the book that you said was out of production and we can't get, but you have another one called Secrets of the Barn Find Hunter, which sounds kind of like a biography, because that's what we know you for. So,
well, that's exactly. I mean, this am I being taped now? Is this live, or are we going live?
We are live. We're live, but it will go to a podcast later. So this will live on forever. You know.
So in other words, people are already listening to me. Now I'm getting nervous.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Those 9 people will never think about me the same way again.
No.
This book. Well, yeah, I got to tell you guys. You know where I'm from. I'm from Holbrook.
Right.
You know, exit 61, and I started hunting for cars when I lived in Holbrook. I mean, I was a kid, and you know, I just did it. It was kind of my own little thing that none of my friends cared about. They were playing baseball and soccer and going hunting and stuff. I didn't care about any of that stuff. So this is just my own little deal that I've been doing my whole life. I would note cars that were sitting in driveways from the bus on the way home and then go back on the weekend on my bicycle and talk to the guy. And this is like, you know, when I'm 12, 13 years old. So this book really wrote itself. I didn't have to write this book because, you know, other books I write, I got to do research, I got to do interviews, I didn't have to do any of that with this book because this is like almost my autobiography in the world of finding cars. It was pretty cool.
Right. Yeah, that's the small blurb I saw. That's what it looked like to me. Chris, you could look this up, Secrets of the Barn Find Hunter. I don't have the blurb that came with this, but it did. When I was reading it, it looked like I said, "Hey, okay, this is like the primer about Tom Carter." If you don't know Tom Carter,
exactly,
it sounds fun. Now, who'd you publish this book through, Tom?
Well, yeah, every one of my books has been through Motor Books, which is owned now. I mean, they've had so many owners, the San Francisco Chronicle, and so many different owners, but now they're owned by Quarto, Quarto,
and they're,
yeah, and they're in the U.S. They're based in Boston, but their headquarters are in London,
right?
And so, you know, I have an amazing relationship where, if a new author were to come along, they'd have to write a long proposal and a sample chapter and a table of contents and all that stuff. And you know, I just call my publisher Zach, who I've been working with for 20 something years. And we just talk on the phone for a half hour. He says, "Okay, I get it. I'm going to bring it to management and see what they think." So I'm really lucky in the relationship I have with this publisher.
Right, right.
That's nice. That's real nice. Tom, I got to ask you, what was that first car? Like you say that you've been doing this since you were a kid, a preteen. What was that first car that you found that said, "You know what? This is what I'm going to do the rest of my life, and I'm going to write about it." Was there a car that was a turning point?
Well, you know, the I found some kind of roadster in the woods. It was a, you know, and I was too young to tell. I was probably, I'm guessing, 10 years old. it was either a Model A Roadster or a 32 Roadster, just the body. And it was in the woods next to my elementary school. And I, you know, I didn't, you know, you if I watched Leave It to Beaver, or if I watched, you know, Ozzie and Harriet with Rick Nelson, you'd occasionally see a hot rod. And sure. A hot rod, you know, some had an open engine, whatever. And I looked at this body and said, man, I could make a hot rod of this. So I could use 2x4s that my father had and make a chassis, and I could put bicycle wheels in front and snow tires in the back. And, you know, this is in my 10-year-old mind, this is how I thought I could do it. So I called my friend Ricky Anderson, which he was, you know, playing baseball out in the field of the school. I said, hey, can you help me carry this thing home? And he says, no, I'm not going to help you do that. So so I could have been, you know, Boyd Coddington or Chip Foose decades earlier than they were if I had dragged that body home. But the first car that I wound up buying was actually a 1940 Ford convertible. And I mentioned Leave It to Beaver because Lumpy Rutherford on Leave It to Beaver, the token fat guy, he had a 40 Ford convertible.
Yes.
And I fell in love with the style of that thing. And I found one behind Charlie's Welding Shop in Rocky Point on Route 25A. And it was $25. So I had $25. And then I had to get it home. So my mother loaned me the money to get it towed. And that was another $25. And, you know, I started to mess around with it. I traded a Common Gear for a 283. But, you know, I was 14. I had no money, no talent, no tools, no garage. And so that car went away when I found the Woody in Brentwood, which you guys know well, at 15. Right. It was a year later, and I found this 39 Ford Woody wagon next to a barn. And that's the car I use today on Barn Find Hunter.
You know, and our buddy Jeep and Al just got in touch with us saying he's still mad at you for getting that car when he wanted it at like 15 years old.
I can't believe it that I found the car that you guys have a friend who saw the same car at the same time.
Yep.
This blows my mind. Half a century later, we're talking about this. I can't believe it.
And you mentioned that on your shows, Tom, how the histrionics kind of follow. And you never know in the ectoplasm of the world where things are going to fall in. But on Long Island, certainly, there's more. The Venn diagram is a lot more populated than...
It's a small island.
It is. It's long, but it's small.
Yeah. Right. Yep. Those nine listeners are very influential.
That's right.
Yes, they are.
So, you know, this is how these things happen. It's rather serendipitous. I was doing research for a book that I ultimately decided not to do, but it was a book about Porsche racing in America. And a name kept on popping up in the results section of races that were at Sebring, Bridgehampton, a last name. And it looked like two brothers. One ran a Porsche, one ran an HRG. And wow, isn't that something? And they were from the same town on Long Island where I used to drink beer in high school. And so I looked it up. And, you know, here'd be the fantasy would be that the old HRG or the Porsche would still be in the family garage, you know, 70 years after. Well, that was not the case. But I got in touch with the son of one of the brothers, and, you know, the other one was his uncle. And he said, nah, I'm sorry to say that those cars, you know, they're long gone. They were gone, you know, before I was born. But, you know, I have cars in the garage here. Oh, what do you got? Yeah. You know, he said, well, I've got a 914-6. Oh, that's it. And then 911. Oh, and I got a GT350. I used to race at Bridgehampton. That's okay. Whoa.
Nice.
I mean, so, you know, this is from a 1952 race results that I just was curious about because I saw a common hometown. And they were on Long Island, and they're sitting there in a building, you know, windows broken or whatever, not in the best, you know, the building's not in the best of health, but I'm telling your listeners that there's plenty of cars on Long Island and in Kansas and in Oregon. They're all over the damn place.
It's interesting because my buddy Joe Dominiani, Frank Dominiani from High Speed in Valley Stream.
Oh, I remember Frank, yeah.
I'm in contact with Joe regularly. We regularly email, text, and talk to each other. He sends me a couple pictures of Frank racing back in the day as he's going through archives. And it was from 52, and he was driving a Guar. GIAUR. And I asked him, like, what the hell is that? And he goes, oh, it was an Italian car. I'm like, is it still around? And he's like, no, that thing was long gone. I think he got it, like, as a promotional deal. Like, they fronted him the car if he would drive it because he was very competitive with the Corvettes back then. and
never heard of that.
No, neither did I. You know, Gwar was a death metal band.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Right. I know. But anyway, yeah, funny stuff.
Wow.
Funny stuff.
That's so fun. Tom, does anybody give you an excuse or give you a reason why they put these cars in these dilapidated buildings and why they shovel them away and so not to see the light of day? Do they actually give you like a reason why they do this?
Well, I kind of talk about that in the book. I think there's several reasons. One is that there was a minor issue with the car, and maybe they couldn't find the part to fix it, or they didn't have the money to find the part, to buy the part to fix it, or life got in the way, they got married and had kids, and there were Little League games and things like that.
Right.
Yeah, and the building was probably nice when they put it in there.
Right, or maybe they got a better car. Maybe they got a better ride and stuck this one off to the side and picked up with car B. So, yeah.
And then I had this theory about, think about the greaser in high school. Okay, so you got the football, you got the quarterback, and he's going out with the cheerleaders, and he's the top of the game in high school. But think about the greaser who had dirt under his fingernails. He worked in a gas station after work, and people didn't, socially he was an outcast, but he had, let's say a GTO. Only a few people appreciate that. But as time went on, the football player hurt his back and it became fat. He got divorced from the cheerleader, but the greaser still had his GTO. And now he's Mr. Popularity because he's sitting in his carport and people are knocking on his door all day long. So, that's another reason that, I think, it's a way to get attention. It's whether it's subconscious or intentional, it's a way to get, people are constantly knocking on your door and now suddenly you're the popular guy. And the third thing is hoarding. Right. I talked to a psychologist about this, and it's in the book that
my wife wants me to too.
You mine too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So it's a compulsion where people feel inadequate unless they have stuff, and they feel that they have to collect a full set. So some people might have, baseball cards, or it might be bicycles, or it might be newspapers. In our case, it's cars. And Keith Martin, who's editor for Sports Car Market magazine, gave me a great quote, and we can all relate to this. The difference between hoarding and collecting is the appearance of organization. Whereas a hoarder, you can't find your way through their house because there's stuff stacked all over the place. A collector has things on shelves, but it's all the same. I once did a barn find hunting episode at this guy's warehouse in Montana. I mean, he had hundreds of cars outside the building, maybe 75 cars inside the building, and he said, and it's all disheveled, and it was sloppy and crappy and not well lit, whatever. And so he said, I got a Corvette back in the corner there that I bought new. I said, you have it back there? I can't see it. He said, I bought it new and it has less than 1,000 miles on it. I said, it's like a 76 maybe. I said, where is it? I can't see it. So he opened the door of the Buick Riviera and the steering column was already out of the Riviera, and you had to slide your way across the front seat out the passenger side so you could get to the other side, and there was the Corvette.
Wow.
And as I got out of the Riviera, I stepped on a mattress with blankets and pillows. I said, oh, man, I'm stepping on something here. He said, that's where I sleep. Holy.
Oh, boy.
So this guy was probably 70, not in good health, told me that I've got too many cars, I got to get rid of it. Now, I have to tell you that in his lifetime, let's say he had 15 to 20 years left, if he got really, really aggressive with eBay and auctions, he'd have the rest of his life to try to get rid of this stuff. And he wasn't even trying.
Right.
And as I was leaving, he said, hey, here's my card. If you find anything good, I'm still buying it.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's not healthy. That's a compulsion.
I've seen it on your YouTube channel many times, Tom. I forget where the guys were. It was a father and son out in the Midwest, and stuff was on the lean-tos, stuff was in barns, and you were asking, would you sell this, would you sell that? And they said, yeah. And then you said, I think you asked them, what would you do with the space here if you get a clean up? And he says, no, if I got the money, I'm going to go out and look for something else. And that's, I guess.
Yeah, did you ever know anybody that had like all those kind of cars that ever finished anything? I mean, and this psychologist said the same thing. that hoarders feel safe when they take things apart, and like they'll put an engine in one building and they'll put the suspension in another building, the body will be over here and there. And that's how they feel safe, that people can't come and steal my car because I've got it in five different locations. But those guys never finish things. They start things, and that's as far as they go.
That's true, yeah. I've definitely
heard
that.
You're absolutely right. Where I would want every one of those cars running and driving, because you never know when you have to leave.
Yeah.
So, there's a guy in Virginia just died, a big time collector, Mark Smith, and he was never married, had no children, his parents were gone, now he died right after Hershey last year, and I talked to his lawyer because I wanted to do an episode there. He had 400 cars, eight different locations, all under roof, all in classic old buildings, but he said, I've got years worth of work to try to sift my way through this. Thankfully, the guy left a will, but this lawyer was, had to deal with this estate. And I always wondered. I met Mark maybe 30 years ago, and I always wondered what his end game was, because he had all these cars that he bought, like when he was 15 years old, and eventually he turned to 70 something, not in good health, and but he owned, Model Ts that had been race cars in the old Vanderbilt Cup. Old Arca series in New England, with double overhead cam Model T motors. But he also had Duesenbergs, and he had a Cobra. And I always wonder, what's his end game? Is he going to sell everything and buy an island? And there was no end game. He died, and now it's somebody else's responsibility.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what our responsibility is now. We're at the bottom of the hour. We have to take care of some business. Tom, I need you to sit tight. Chris, do we have another honor group of the hour?
As a matter of fact, on this fine upstanding Sunday, we do, Ray. The Motormouth Radio Honor Group of this hour is if you were ever caught in the rain with your classic car or hot rod. Ever start out cruising around when suddenly the clouds thicken up instantly? Yeah. Isn't that the time when you start thinking about your windshield wipers and if they work at all? How are the wiper blades? Does the wiper motor work? Does the wiper switch work? It's at this moment that you think how you should have spent all that money for replacement weather stripping. That maybe would have been a good idea. Or even wondering why you didn't reinstall the old crunchy weather stripping back on the car in the first place. The rain starts, you flick on the wipers, they start slowly and stop mid-sweep, so you flip the wiper switch back and forth again, and you keep doing this because now you figure now is a good time to clean the contacts on the wiper switch motor as you watch your windshield wipers spaz out. Then it's just a matter of fact getting the car home and contemplating spending the next 4 days bailing the water out and wearing out all the hair dryers in the house.
Right.
So there you go. If you ever got caught in the rain in your classic car, you're part of the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour.
Excellent. And let me mention that for people who've tuned in and are hearing us and saying, hey, where's my Springsteen? No, the Thunder Road, Kim's show, Best of Springsteen, will be on. We're preempting her for an hour, but she'll be back on at 2 o'clock when you can pick up with her. You can pick up with us again, too. Don't forget to watch. There was a new episode of Sam's Garage, which started yesterday. It premiered yesterday morning on Motor Trend. You can check that out on the web. You can see Sam and Doug work on this 57 T-Bird. And for us, we got to take care of a little bit of business. Fundraising is still in effect. You can call 516-572-7438. Talk to one of our representatives, and you can donate whatever you have in your pocket to help keep WHPC running. But keep it where you got it. Big breath. We have to take a little bit of a break, and we'll be back. Tom, you stay with us, and we'll be back with more Motormouth Radio on 90.3 WHPC. In a sec. Here we go.
Show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limerick and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop will fix your car. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. All repairs include the CarStar Lifetime Nationwide Warranty, ensuring that the experts at Celebrity Chase Collision are always on your side.
Y si hablamos español.
More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
You're You're listening to the Motor Mouths.
Hello, gentlemen.
Next
you guys
one.
Call yourself hot rods. Come on, man.
I was waiting for you to learn how to trim my bonsai plant.
Motor Mouth.
Love the show and keep them coming.
You have to excuse me. I was just outside messing around with the car.
I'm reluctant to say I'm anything like you guys.
Motor Mouth.
But I am exactly like you guys.
I try and keep every old thing going.
Good show as usual.
Motor Mouth.
You guys are trouble.
I know you guys have your finger on the pulse of stuff.
Our trained staff of two will help.
Come on and ask and answer some car questions. I'm a fountain of useless knowledge.
Well, quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time.
Instructions are just another man's opinion, Ray.
Yeah, I talk to you guys when I need you. I appreciate you. I listen to you.
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
I'll be glad to answer any questions for you. I can.
You're so different because you glow in the dark, so it's all good.
Rob, can I ask you a question?
Sure, ask anything you want.
Motor Mouth!
Have you heard from Ray or Chris saying that this was going to be the best show ever in the history
of mankind?
No, you
see, it's funny because Ray will come in and say, well, Rob, this is going to be the greatest show
we've
ever done.
It's not Sunday morning until I'm sure.
And sometimes Chris...
Motor Mouth Radio is going to be the best show that was ever done.
And then Chris will sometimes joke that it's going to be the worst show they've ever done.
There are answers, sometimes correct ones, and we may have them.
Motor Mouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHPC.
Motor Mouth!
Hi, this is Ray Guarino, host of Motormouth Radio, heard Sundays at noon on the voice of Nassau Community College, and this show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by the Town of Oyster Bay. Supervisor Joe Saladino invites you to the Town of Oyster Bay's car show, Long Island Spring Classic, presented by Bethpage Federal Credit Union, Now Medical, MSG Networks, Ambassador Home Improvements, and PSEG Long Island on Saturday, April 30th at Tobey Beach, featuring classic muscle and exotic cars and 4x4s, a food truck corral, vendors, displays, and live music by that 70s band. It's all at the Town of Oyster Bay's Long Island Spring Classic on Saturday, April 30th at Tobey Beach. More information and how to enter your car into Car Show Long Island is available by calling 516-797-4121 or by visiting online at carshowli.com.
Hey you, get over here. Every Sunday, 12 to 1, you are going to tune in to hear the Motor Mouths, my friends Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer. 90.3 FM, WHPC. You might learn something.
All right, we are back. Motor Mouth Radio, Long Island's only rock and roll. We're getting some feedback there. Okay.
So I just sent you guys a picture. You talked about driving a car in the rain.
Yes, Tom.
Look at your text right now, I just sent you a picture. You know, a frozen rain, driving a car in frozen rain.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that is absolutely pretty. We shall, Chris.
That was 26 degrees. That was 26 degrees driving over a mountain in Montana with a Cobra with no roof and no side curtains and no heat.
Wow.
On a very icy road. And I still am married to the same woman who's sitting in the passenger seat.
That
you are a lucky, lucky man. That is incredible. Holy smokes. Tom, I have done something very similar. I ended up ruining the top on I had a Buick Electra convertible. I ruined the top on it. And I drove it from Brooklyn all the way up to Connecticut. And it was about 22 degrees, and the heat was not working well. Like, I didn't have a high setting on the car, the heat setting at the time.
Yeah.
So it was, you got like low, mid, and maybe kind of high. And I had to put the top down because the top was flapping in the breeze. I had to put it down, and I'm on the Merritt Parkway. It's like January 4th, and I'm driving along, and I am freezing my butt off, and people like pulling up next to me, and they're beeping and they're waving. I'm like, you're insane. They're like, no, you're insane.
You know, I got to tell you guys the one thing that really makes me smile. I hear Paul's stories about driving a dune buggy and getting, you know, with no windows and no top. And I drive my Fiat, and I tell you, if I roll the windows up with the top down, the cabin stays warm because the car has great heat. And if I put the top up, I actually have to, I don't even use the blower motor. I just open the heating vent.
Yeah.
And it seems like I'm in such, I feel like I'm in such a, like a, you know, like some kind of a classy upscale car, and like, it's a Fiat Spider, but it's got heat in the top.
It's
so
got heat.
That's all you need to feel like a human when you're driving.
Yeah, I'm definitely part of Chris's honor group of the hour.
Right.
Paul, so am I. Yeah, I drove my Chrysler, and I got caught in a rainstorm, and I'm like, now's a good time to check the windshield wipers.
Yeah, I was out east. I was out east coming back from a car show when the skies just opened up. I was on the LIE.
Oh.
But you know what? Oh. Wasn't I put the wipers on, you know, and they're going, but the windshield's not getting clear. And I'm like, what the heck's going on? The wipers are running, but the windshield's not getting clear. The water was on the inside.
Oh, no.
I took a rag. I was like, oh, that's okay. But, you know, as long as I was at highway speed, it wasn't bad. Yeah. So when I got off on those side streets, you know.
Yeah.
But I did put plugs. I did put drain plugs in the thing when I built it, just, you know. Just to make sure.
Smart.
Yeah.
Just to make sure.
Tom, have you made any modifications to the Woody with HVAC in mind or water clearing or anything? Because you drive that car everywhere.
Yeah, it's a totally modern car. It's a modern car with a vintage body. You know, of all the years I've owned it, I decided, when I bought the car, I was 15. I'm going to drive it to California when I graduate high school. Well, that never happened. And, but, you know, when I got the car back in 97 from the guy in Puerto Rico, you know, I just went whole hog and wrote a real big check. And so it's got a TCI frame with, an LS Corvette motor with 700R transmission and disc brakes, air conditioning, power steering, and all that good stuff. So, you know, I've driven that car several times across the United States, and it's amazing. It's great.
Right. Yeah, it makes a little difference.
And that was a barn find. I mean, that was a barn. That was sitting next to a barn on Wicks Road when I went to Seton Hall High School. And, you know, I'm walking across the schoolyard, and bam, there's a Woody. And, you know, the following week, I owned it.
Right.
That is extraordinary. Are there any other cars that you hunted that you ended up purchasing?
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, the most recent one, I mean, because I don't need any more cars. You know, I need to get rid of cars. But... on one of my episodes, I found a 1967 Ford Country Squire station wagon up near Ann Arbor, Michigan. Had not been restored, so it had kind of this little surface layer of rust. And, you know, the wood siding, the fake wood siding, the decals were all faded out. But under the hood, it was the only one ever built with a 428 cubic inch and a four-speed transmission and bucket seats and a console that, you know, Lee Iacocca authorized this car to be built.
Right.
And so I own this one-of-one car. I owned it for like 5 years. It was great. And I sold to a guy in New Jersey, and he loves it.
Yeah, that went off on Bring a Trailer. I was watching the auction, and I said, you know, I'm not really a Ford guy, but I would drive that car. Boy, I would have owned that thing.
It sounds like a cool car.
Yeah, really, you know, the problem was that, you know, if you went to a gas station and fill up a gas, half the people thought you were the coolest dude in the world, and the other half, like moms with a van, little kids, don't look at that man, he's homeless. So you had to have be a pretty strong person. You had to have a lot of self-confidence to drive a car like that.
Right.
do you have any idea how many cars you've bought and sold over the years?
Oh, boy.
I'm not a dealer, you know, and I don't even...
No, but I mean, just cars, a rough number.
I buy cars easily, and I sell them hard. And
right.
In that, I still have the Woody. I still have a 53 Ford two-door wagon I bought for $85 in high school. Mm. I have a supercharged Volkswagen convertible that I've had for since 79. It's a supercharged Judson supercharger on a Volkswagen engine. So,
that's cool.
You know, I keep cars a long time.
Mm-hmm.
To me, they become friends. It's almost like a golden retriever.
Right.
I don't want to get rid of them. Like,
yeah,
I
but
just,
keeping or not, like, I was just curious how many over the years
hundreds,
you think you've...
Hundreds.
Yeah.
You know, Paul, people have even asked me that question, and I have nowhere near the amount that Tom has had. And I, when I was younger, I was actually keeping a record of them all, and then somewhere along the line I stopped. But, yeah, you'd be surprised if you knew. Like, someone recently asked me what I had put into my car, and I said, I don't know. And what do you mean you don't know? You have to know. You keep record. I'm like, yeah. I said, I kept methodical records of every penny I spent.
Mm-hmm.
I just never added it up.
Well, yeah. People ask me the same with the Dune Buggy. They're like, how much did you put in the Dune Buggy? And I'm like, I don't. I never added up the receipts.
Don't
I have
know.
Them. I'm afraid to.
Yeah. Exactly.
But it's actually not as much as I thought. Yeah.
What, Chris?
I'm kind of opposite. I'll buy a car and sell it. Yes. Yeah. To me, it's they're commodities to be bought and sold. I always like to see how much I can invest into the vehicle and how much I can sell it for. And a lot of times, if I'm buying and selling, if I'm going to lose money on the vehicle, I end up keeping it.
And you also, but you also played a shop teacher in Corvette Summer. So, you know, that's where you got that line from. We know. So we have to mention, of course, we are in our fundraising marathon, and you can get in on this. We want to thank our good friend, Steve B. Made a donation. Thank you very much, Steve, for helping keeping this radio station going. The special number to call is 516-572-7438. And you can get, for a $75 donation, a set of tickets to a tribute to the Beatles coming to NYCB June 18th. And if you like Beatles and Beatles songs and Rob's show and all sorts of cool stuff, you can get in on that at 516-572-7438. All righty. Thank you.
Tom, I got to ask you, I have a friend of mine that has a CUDA convertible that's here in my neighborhood. And if you opened up the garage, there's a two-car garage. And because of all the junk in the garage that he presently has, you can't see the car. I'm serious. I'm a guy that can find a little reflector and I know what kind of car it is. You can't tell. Has there been a time where you went car hunting and, like you said, there was a Corvette in the corner that there was just so much junk that you had to peel away like an onion to get to the vehicle? Has that ever happened?
Yeah, there's one episode we did probably in the second year, and I met a guy in Santa Barbara who had a really rare car. So you guys and your listeners should Google this. It was a Pegaso, P-E-G-A-S-O. Ooh, it's a Spanish car, very rare, very valuable. And he said, I got one in the garage. It hasn't been in years. You know, like, I'm going to open the door for you. And he opened the door, and it was like this solid wall of baby toys and bicycles and old shop equipment and stuff. And I said, you got to be kidding me. And he said, no, there's a... So he had a dumpster delivered, and it was his father-in-law's house. His father-in-law had just passed away, so he inherited the Pegaso. And it took us, I don't know, 2.5-3 hours to unearth this car. And you know, oh, there's a roof, look at that. And you worked your way down more, and yeah, I can look inside the interior now, and oh, look at, there's the hood. And as we worked our way down, and then under the car, you know, there was a spare transmission and a spare wheels and stuff. So it was a long day of, you know, and we finally pushed the car out of the garage into the driveway, and we were able to do a whole episode. But we did a kind of a speeded up video of us cleaning out this garage. I mean, it was, we took 2.5-3 hours and broke it down to, like, you know, 15 seconds. It was amazing. So, yes, that happens all the time, and that's a common thing, not only with hoarders, but just, you know, with people that have a neat car, that, and life gets in the way, you know? And you know, I think they do it with the best intentions of one day getting back out there and working on it. But, you know, first I got some kids to go to college.
You know, I've been watching our friend Ryan Brutt, the auto archaeologist on YouTube, and he does a lot of Mopar stuff, and he unearthed, there's some guy he found in a farm, and the guy has a ton. And he's got E-bodies and B-bodies and all collectible stuff, Hemi cars, real desirable stuff, and he collected it because he knew what he was buying, but it's in just such a disarray. The guy is in physically bad shape, and he's finally selling stuff off, but what they got to do to get some of this stuff out is horrendous.
Yeah. So, you know, in the book, and I hope my publisher sends you a copy of it, you know, in chapter 4, I talk about, you know, kind of the pro tips, the tips that I suggest to people, and I don't know how many I have in here, but there's a bunch of 25.
Bring a shovel.
You know, so here's, yeah. You know, these are things that I do, like, every day. You know, like, when I'm going to get pizza or a quart of milk, I'm looking, you know. First of all, if you want to find an old car, drive something cool. Because no matter where you stop, at a traffic light, at a gas station, people want to talk to you about it. And I am a firm believer that everybody knows somebody with an old car. They just... It doesn't really come to mind quickly, but I'll be at a wedding or a funeral and, you know, you do what with old cars? And then I'll get a phone call 3 days later. You know, I was thinking about what you said, and my cousin's got an old car in the backyard, you know? So everybody's like, so drive something cool, because when you drive that car into the driveway of somebody that's got an old car, they want to talk to you as much as you want to talk to them. And that's my icebreaker.
Yeah, you know? Well, to interrupt you a second, that happened to me. I was just telling Ray about it. Mm-hmm. It happened to me in a dune buggy. I was at the beach. And a guy came up to me, and he's like, hey, you know, I got some parts for that. You know, you interested? And I'm like, yeah. So I went to the guy's house. It turned out he had an old garage in the back. He had a fastback Mustang sitting in there. that he was, you know, at some point working on as an older man, and he had a an AC Cobra kit, but a vintage one, like from the 60s, you know, or early 70s, that he was toying around with selling.
You just got Tom interested.
Yeah.
No, you know, if it was a real Cobra, my antenna went up. But you know,
no, it wasn't real. No, it wasn't real. It was one of the old. It was from a manufacturer in Connecticut, I believe.
It's something we would drive.
Yeah. Oh, the manufacturer Connecticut. I remember those guys. ERA, I think it was.
Something like that. Yeah, yeah. But it was one of them. It had the big block in it. You know, it had, I forget what rear. It might have been the Jag rear in there. You know, like that setup. Yeah. That's what they used in those back in the day.
Yeah, good. Put a 427 in it and a Jag rear and just literally grenade the thing out of the back of the car, right?
Hey, this was it.
Yep. Yeah.
He bought it as an unfinished kit. He finished it, you know, back in the 70s. He finished it, and then he drove it, and then it ended up in the garage here. And then I don't know if he started taking it apart a little bit to do it, and then never did it. And then, you know, so.
So number two here, as I say, you can go home again. And that is like, you know, we all have memories of being a kid riding our bike around, and there was a guy around the corner that built hot rods, or there was a shop in town that had a field full of antique cars in the back, whatever. And I found that you can go back to those places, and even if that person is not still alive, sometimes their belongings are still there. And, you know, in one case, this widow, she said, yeah, I got all my husband's cars, and I haven't done anything since he died. And, like, you're the answer to my prayers. And, you know, I wound up buying a rare an Abarth
from
her. Yeah. But she had Porsche turbos, and actually, her husband was a doctor in Setauket. And he built helicopters. I mean, just an amazing guy. And I wish I could have met him. But he had race cars, street cars, and I wish I could have bought them all, but we couldn't come to terms on it. But you can go, you know, your listeners know that if they can go back to their old hometown, and more than likely, somebody's still got something in that town that they remember from childhood. Right. The third thing I talk about is the weekends. Garages are closed all week generally, but on weekends, people do yard work. Mm-hmm. And so the garage doors open, they got the mower out, they got shovels and rakes and wheelbarrows. And if there's ever a moment to see a garage that's closed 99% of the time, it's on a Saturday or Sunday when the homeowners are out there doing work. And, you know, that's a great time to go hunting, boy.
And, Tom, if I can interject, I love one of the tips you gave us in the past where, same thing, when that garage is open, even when you see it, go the other way. Drive the other way down the road because you may spot something from a different angle that you didn't see from the first angle. And I've seen that happen to me and said, wow, it really does work.
Yeah. Every road is two roads. It's the road going left and a road going right. Yep.
Yeah, right. That's a great tip. So, Tom, please give us the name of this book again and where people can find it so that they can enjoy
it. Okay, well, the easiest place to find it is on Amazon, and it's called Secrets of the Barn Find Hunter. The Art of Finding Lost Collector Cars. I wrote it, and then the introduction was written by McKeel Haggerty.
Right.
We all knew Haggerty's the 800-pound gorilla now in the antique car world, and he's a serious car guy. And it starts off with pictures of him digging a Porsche 911 out of the snow at 14 years old that he and his father restored. Right. You know, so he comes to this business, you know, kind of the old-fashioned way. I'm sorry.
In the future, we may have to lean on you. We've had McKeel on this show. It was years ago, but since then, being a Haggerty customer, you know, I get emails. I've emailed him again and invited him back, and I guess he's kind of busy to answer. So I may have to lean on you to help us get another invite with McKeel. But
he is a busy guy. They went public recently, so
yeah,
he's no matter how busy his life was before, I'm sure his wife would like to call me and say, I can't get a hold of my husband. Can you put me in touch with him? So I'll put you right behind his wife, okay?
That's fine, right. Tom, we're going to have to let you go. We appreciate the time you spent with us and sharing this great information. We look forward to seeing this book. And, we thank you for spending some time with us today on Motor Mouth Radio.
Yeah, and Tom, I'd like to thank you, too, for actually mentioning us in your print. And I've seen it, and I've appreciated it. It's really, really nice when friends can support one another. And I thank you personally for it. Thank you.
Yes.
All right. Well, guys, it's always a pleasure.
Thanks,
Tom. I look forward to coming to I look forward next time I'm on the island to come to your studio again.
You got it.
You
keep in touch, and I'll get you a spot. No problem.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
All right. Bye-bye. All right,
thanks.